Hello, everyone. This is Connie Shaw, your host for Awakening Talks with Compelling People, where we interview leading lights and emerging figures in the fields of spirituality, selfless service, and miracles. The topic of our show tonight is Hunger in America, and the interview title is Jane Trainor, Feeding the Hungry in Fairbanks, Alaska. Tonight's guest, as we said, is Jane Trainor, who is a colonic therapist and landscape painter from Fairbanks. Jane is the founder of the Human Values Feeding Project, which has successfully networked with numerous community organizations to provide food each week for a variety of people in need. Welcome back to the show, Jane.
Well, thank you, Connie.
You're welcome. Jane, what event or dawning awareness propelled you into your commitment to alleviate local hunger? And how many years ago was that?
In 1992, I went to India for the first time and decided to dedicate my life to selfless service and making the world a better place and helping the golden age to dawn. And in doing that, I immediately started to join in with projects that were already in operation. And so I found myself at the local Catholic church, and they have a soup kitchen down in the basement. That's where I started to do serving and doing the dishes, doing whatever needed to have done. And I found how much joy I got from doing that. So I stayed with them for quite a while. And then as time went on, I started to educate my children at home and wanted to involve them in projects. But in 1992, my husband and I decided to remarry each other and dedicate ourselves to doing selfless service. And in so doing, I went from different projects, joined different organizations, and found with time that I really wanted to do my own and not join in with others. And so in 1999, I went back to India, and I had the privilege of listening to youth groups from around the world discuss their projects that they had, taking care of elders or feeding the hungry in their neighborhoods throughout the world. Very inspiring, and at that time became inspired to do the same in Fairbanks by creating boxes of food that we could deliver to doors, as I had already done that with a local AIDS project where we were making foods for AIDS families that were in need, because food is critical. If you can keep your, back then before the cocktail, to keep your weight up, you needed to have good, wholesome food. So I thought we would do the same for families that were in need, and so we began the Human Values Project.
What trends have you seen in Fairbanks and Alaska as a whole in regard to homelessness and homeless feeding?
Well, it hasn't become less, that's for sure. It does tend to keep going. I've noticed that there's been more homes that seem to suffer and have to struggle very, very hard to make ends meet. So we've reached out to families that were having temporary problems or chronic long-term problems, and I would say that it hasn't gotten worse, but because the population goes up, there's been a portion of the population that just seems to have it the roughest, and we reach out to them.
How many people help you in the homeless feedings? I understand you have two different projects, so could you isolate each project and then tell us about that in full, and then go to the next one so we have an understanding of what you're doing with whom when?
Okay, they are connected, but I will do my best. The Human Values Project, we started it out as an adjunct to the homeschooling project for my kids. I wanted to teach them about community service and making the world a better place by living according to their conscience and by the human values of love, peace, truth, right conduct, and nonviolence. By bringing them into their hearts and dedicating themselves to that, then you turn around and you create a means to make selfless service in the world, which then it opens the receiver's heart, who then spontaneously will do the same, and it will create ripples throughout the world and put more love in the world. So they joined me with that. And we started out with up to 18 volunteers, and that was back when the kids were involved, and it was all their friends, and we had as many as 29 families, as many as 90 people that would receive food from these 29 family boxes that we would then turn around and deliver to the doors. And that was in the beginning. As time has gone on and the kids have grown up and moved away or just gone off to do their own things, we still have two faithful young kids involved, and my husband, myself, and Curtis. And we're about 19 families and about 50 people right now that we serve and we continue to do. We do it on Sundays. We start at about 11 o'clock, and we do it until about, after deliveries, it's about 9 o'clock for me. And on Tuesdays, I go to the local, there's a grocery store that is sympathetic to our group and the Catholic Church. And because my other project involves working with the soup kitchen and making one meal for their weekend meals a week, I'm able to have the privilege of picking up food for the Human Values Club, the Human Values Project, on Sundays. And so I pick that up on Tuesday and plan my meals from then and go and buy what we need to fill in the gaps on the menu that I plan and then go for it. At the same time, I'm also planning my meal for the Catholic Church Soup Kitchen Project.
Well, you may be interested in the fact that in Colorado, where we live, the food banks are having a very difficult time now in December of 2008, keeping up with the pressing need due to recent economic challenges in the country. And I learned last night when I went to the Weld County Food Bank to do volunteering that the Walmart chain, as well as Safeway and King Soopers, have now decreed at their headquarters offices that it will be mandatory for all of the stores in the chains throughout the country to participate by giving a certain amount of or percentage of food to the local food banks on a regular basis. There are now restaurants that are donating food. There are bakeries and various other organizations that realize that the hunger and homelessness situation in the United States is now being referred to as the silent tsunami, and it does seem to be causing a great deal of anxiety on the part of the whole society, because it's realized that the typical organizations and NGOs are not able to stem the flood of people that are suddenly desperate, who may have experienced being evicted from a house that was being foreclosed upon, or they might have suddenly lost a job or two in the family. So I'm wondering, Jane, what are some statistics on hunger and homelessness in Alaska? Or if you don't have those, maybe you could tell us how Alaska is unique because of the climate and the population base. For example, could you familiarize us with the seasons, the daylight, the temperatures, and so on, so we can get a sense of what people are up against in Alaska?
Well, we have had a lower population than everywhere else in the United States because
and
the
what
weather
is, it now?
Is so extreme. Well, today we're actually enjoying a balmy 5 below, which is delightful because it's such a dry climate. You really don't feel cold till about 20 below zero Fahrenheit. To 50 below, 55 below is what the worst I've seen it. And it doesn't get that low very much. It stays pretty much between 10 below and 10 above, which is, for me, a comfort zone. The hardest part really is the darkness, and we are, as we speak, in the darkest days of the year. Solstice is this weekend, as it is now the 19th of December. We all love that day. The first day of winter is the best day of the year because we're halfway through our winter and it's going to start to get lighter. So it's a hard time. There's a lot of mentally ill people here. The darkness affects them. There's a lot of depression, a lot of heavy alcoholism, alcoholism tends to be heavier circumpolarly, and we are no exception to that. Mm-hmm. Also drugs, drug addiction. And then there's the abusive part of life where people take things out on each other. We don't tend to hurt strangers, I think perhaps because where there is extremes in temperatures, people tend to take good care of each other, which is one of the wonderful things about Alaska. It's very warm-hearted. But there is a lot of dysfunctional family life due to addictions, so people do take it out on their family members. So we've got those kinds of problems. One of the reasons I believe, from all that I've heard, that Alaska has not suffered quite the economic blows yet is because we deploy all of the soldiers from Alaska to Iraq. If there is a wind down in this new administration in the war, we're all looking at the very real possibility that we are not going to have the economic monies poured into this place because of the military, and we will then be following suit with the rest of America, in which case what I'm doing is going to be even more in demand, and why I'm so grateful to you to inspire as many people as possible to get on board to create this wave of service that can help to alleviate the suffering. So I'm looking to that day. I think that it will come. So,
yes, I think
but other than that, but and then also from the other side of it, we have the most wonderful summers ever.
Tell us about the summers. Tell us when the darkness subsides and the days get longer, and then what those spring and summer and fall days and evenings are like.
Well, the equinox in September and in March marks the time of 12 hours of daylight, mm-hmm. both night and day. So that's when, same as everywhere else in the world, and that's when we start to accelerate. We lose our stars in April, and we get them back in probably late September, and the northern lights will also come. And during that time between April and September, the snows go, and the summer comes very quickly in about a week's time, which is absolutely extraordinary. And the weather stays at about 70, in the interior here where I live, about 70, 75 degrees. Maybe it'll push 85 on a rare day. So it's really perfect. Dry weather, not too breezy. Just, it's really delightful here, and everybody loves it. And
now,
we stop grumbling about wanting to go to Hawaii for a while.
Well, then, do you have any migrant populations that are more in evidence in the summer, but who travel elsewhere during the winter, or do you have shelters for homeless people, or are your people that you serve primarily not homeless, but they are primarily needy, although they live in maybe substandard housing or with relatives?
Yes. There is very few brave souls that will tent out all winter.
Uh-huh.
They do exist, and they're amazing to me, often mentally ill,
uh-huh.
and they will just brave it. But we have a homeless shelter. It's uh-huh. usually pretty full. From all that I understand, I don't work there. Most of the people live in substandard housing, or they will take their dividend checks, because we get an oil dividend check, at least at this point in history, and they'll pool them and get a home, and everybody will use it as a flop house for the winter. That's not uncommon. So there's that. And we have a very transient population. There are, yes, the snowbirds that are rooted here for the summer times. But we also have a very high transient population, which is also very stressful, both on the town, but also on the families that live here that do move around. It can be from the military or just people coming up for a quick buck and then leaving. And that is really common. So transient population is very hard on people's souls. They don't, it's hard to watch and it's hard to see.
I would imagine that people thus don't put down roots. There's not a lot of trust. They can be quite isolated and alienated, and there's just not the connection that is usually made because they have to uproot again.
Right. Another bleed over from the Athabascan culture is that this is a very Spartan land to live off of. There's not a whole lot of game. It's not good agriculturally. It supported very few people. So the Athabascan villages would spread way out for trapping season, hunting season, and then they would come in to the village at certain times of the year to celebrate and be together and share. And then they would go back out into their isolated cabins. So isolation and loneliness are chronic problems here. It breeds a lot of discontent and depression.
How has your responding to the problem changed you as a person, since you're a caregiver, an ad hoc caregiver? And I'm wondering also, in that line, what are the emotional and spiritual benefits of doing weekly feeding projects?
Well, for me personally, I have learned to find a great deal of contentment being alone. It's my spiritual time with God. For other people, it's also an extraordinary place where light and love are desperately needed. So there's no end of things to do in terms of doing service work. So no problem there. What was the other part of your question?
Yes, how it's changed you as a person and what the emotional and spiritual benefits have been for doing weekly selfless service. For you. I mean, it was obviously, it satisfies something in your soul. It has helped you to become more organized, and you are able to see that people really appreciate what you do.
I think, yes, all of the above. And I think even more importantly, it's helped me to understand who I am, as I've come to identify myself more as spirit in a body that whose essence is love and caring and giving, and that that spirit is in everybody that I'm also serving. By loving them, I help to bring it out in them, which helps to bring them closer to who they really are. And I feel like I want to jumpstart God understanding in everybody by doing what I do.
Yeah,
and
so,
that is deeply soul-satisfying.
Oh, well, thank you for sharing so intimately with us about that, Jane. Since you're a business owner and a wife and a mother, and you care for your elderly mother at home, and you're involved in a number of service projects, how do you tend to your own physical, mental, and emotional needs so you don't become burnt out, as they say?
I have to meditate every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I meditate first thing in the morning, and then also when I take my mother to church, I get a little more time to meditate. So I get as much time in doing that as I can.
So you meditate twice a day, and how about at the end of the day? Do you have any quiet time to yourself?
Yes, it's usually my time to read,
mm-hmm.
and that's always wonderful too. That's very soul satisfying. I usually like to read books on spirituality and moving forward in that part of my life.
In the face of rising statistics on hunger and homelessness, how do you maintain your faith and sparkle and optimism? I understand that being at church with your mother while you're meditating is satisfying and renewing, and that your family life is important to you. But do you ever feel that you wonder if the hunger situation is going to get desperate?
It could. Like I said, we haven't seen the worst of it, as I'm hearing you're beginning to down in Colorado.
Yes.
I believe that those days are going to come here, and so I will experience that when it gets here. In the meantime, I really see the world in shift big time,
mm-hmm.
into something that's going to be brand new, something I can only hope and pray will be fair to everybody on the planet rather than just the privileged few at the top. I would like to see a new system emerge from all of this chaos, which I have faith it will.
Yes, I think it will be thrust upon us, and hopefully the very best in human nature will come to the fore as we learn once again to truly love and take care of each other and to experience the fact that we are brothers and sisters in the human family.
Mm-hmm. And I do believe that love plays the key part here. The more love that's put into the world, the more it will be able to purify the system, the more that we will have the chance to see something that will be fair for everybody in the world. So I really believe that selfless service is the key to helping to create the new world that will be better for everybody.
I totally agree with you. I would like to ask you now, who supplies the food and the funds for your projects? Do you have a 501c3 or a nonprofit status or a budget, or is your homeless feeding primarily on a wing and a prayer, as they say?
A wing and a prayer. We consciously chose not to go nonprofit, not tax exempt status for these feeding programs. We decided to do it and learn about faith and trusting in something bigger than ourselves to do this through us effortlessly. And so far, so good.
So you've never run out of food in nearly 20 years of doing this?
Never. Not only that, but the money keeps flowing in because we do reach into our pocket. Well, if we need money, we reach into our pocket. There have been people that periodically will donate to us, but mostly it's come from Ron and myself, and we've been happy to just fill in the gaps. Everything flows together really beautifully, and it's never been a burden on us, ever.
I want to ask you this. I don't know why it's occurring to me, but if your expenses would be paid, do you ever do public speaking, for example, motivational speaking, or appearing to speak on behalf of the topic of hunger and homelessness fundraisers?
I would. It's tentative according to the timing, my mother, making sure she's in good hands. It costs me to have her taken care of. I have to pay people to watch after her when I'm in my absence.
I understand.
So I take very few trips. However,
yes,
it can be done, and I would be delighted to speak. I do enjoy meeting new people and speaking on this, my favorite subject.
Yes, well, thank you. Jane, what do you consider to be the elements of a successful feeding project, and is there a reciprocal aspect to the project? For example, have any of the recipients of the feeding ever joined the servers?
Yes, I would say that seeing people as part of the Creator, as God, as spirit in human form, those kinds of concepts have been instrumental for me to having it work, because I honor them, I love them, I see them as God, Jesus, Mary, whatever works for you, but to see them as divine and to love them as God is really been very satisfying for me. And I believe that they feel, I know, I don't believe it, I know, I've seen how that changes them, how it helps them, and I can only hope that it is creating a rippling effect into their lives, as I'm absolutely certain it has. Also, what's the second part of that?
Has anyone have any of the recipients of the food?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I've had many of the families come to pick up their boxes, and they come early and will spend hours helping us prepare food. I had a woman who was blind. Her husband was blind, and they had 10 children, and often 3 or 4 or 5 of them would come and help us as well. We've had a woman who was chronically lonely and mentally ill come every Sunday for a while and cook with us the whole day, and it meant a great deal to her. And even after she stopped doing it, she would talk about it and how much it meant to her. So yes, I have been able to infuse in the recipients the joy of selfless service, which is always deeply soul satisfying for people to know that they have something to give. But then there's also watching the recipients turn around and find their ways to give. It may be different than cooking for people in need. It may be some other way that they can give, but I've watched that happen, and that's also deeply soul-satisfying, because it's like getting a glimpse into the rippling effect that takes place with selfless service, of opening up hearts that will spontaneously turn around and open up and give, and watching it start to go off into the horizon and hoping that it's going to create the effects, which is a better world for everybody.
Yes, and you might be interested to know that there are more and more food banks and assistance programs that are focusing on ways that people can break the cycle of hunger and homelessness. And so you may have heard the phrase, teach them to bake bread, not just take bread. So as a consequence, more and more centers and shelters and food banks are doing brainstorming to consider how people that are the recipients of the services might be able to find new skills so that they can use those skills to get on their feet, stay on their feet, and not have to keep experiencing being the recipients, which has its humiliating aspects regardless of the love and tenderness that is shown. Sometimes people become very discouraged that they can't seem to break the cycle and join the rest of society as meaningful contributors. So I find that very fact of helping them break the cycle be something that I think is greatly needed, and I'm glad that this is something that's a new point of emphasis. Now, I was going to ask you if there was anything, since we're in our last 2 minutes, is there anything you would do differently if you were just starting out doing feeding in Fairbanks, Jane?
I really, for me personally, and I don't know if this would work for other people, but I really enjoy doing it out of my own home. Mm-hmm. It's been far more satisfying to be able to do it from here and create this as a center.
Now,
so
do
that's
you mean,
something that we've done.
Oh, okay, excuse me. For our listeners, do you mean organizing the ingredients and cooking the meals and then boxing them and then taking them in your vehicle to the various locations? Is that what you mean by doing it in your home?
Yes, rather than from other organizations, that it's always a little complicated to do it with other organizations. You never know if you're going to be politically stepping on toes unknowingly. And my husband and I made a solemn vow we would never have that situation again. So we've managed to avoid political difficulties by just being home. It's simpler. It feels so much better for me, and I feel that the more comfortable Ron and I are, the better the meals are going to be.
That's excellent. It keeps more control over the project so that you know you're dependable, you know the extent of your commitment, and you know that you have an interfaith approach to the whole thing, that you regard everyone equally, and you just want to love and serve everyone that you contact and not have any other agendas creep in. Now, Jane, would you like to leave our listeners with any other uplifting or practical thoughts before we sign off? Or would you like to reiterate anything you have said about the significance of it for the community?
I will tell a story. How's that?
Yes, yes.
One of my favorite stories with the Human Values Project. I had a mother call me with the request to please give food to her daughter, who she had adopted, who was developmentally delayed and probably in her late 30s, early 40s at the time. And so we began, and this woman, Sandra, would receive the boxes and not respond much, just say thank you and go in. And I did that for a number of years. And then one time she pulled me into her, first I received another phone call from the mother in July, and she said, whatever you do, please don't stop giving food to my daughter. And that was the end of that. And then her daughter started pulling us in and talking about her life. She's living by herself in a home. And I would start to become part of her life. She started calling Ron and myself whenever she needed some help with taking care of fixing something in the house and that sort of thing, listening to her with problems, giving her support. And one time she happened to mention her mother, and I said, oh, yeah, your mother, she's called me, you know. And she says, yeah, she passed away. Oh, really? When did she die? Last July. So it occurred to me that it was a mother's dying wish that we just look after her daughter and give her something, because this project has been more than just feeding. It's been becoming involved in people's lives who would otherwise stay lonely, isolated, and feel that nobody cared. we've become somebody who cares for a lot of people as a result of this. We've put our toenail in their door, and then when they know that when they need help, we can be there. We've supplied toys for Christmas. We've been there to watch, to help them die. We've taken them into our homes when they were sick and helped rehabilitate them to get them back home into their homes. We've done all kinds of things that have reached out into their homes and into their hearts. And that also is very satisfying. Created friends from this.
Yes, Jane. Well, you are love on two legs walking. Thank you so much for sharing your remarkable life and your tremendous heart. That concludes our show tonight. Jane, thank you for being with us.
You're most welcome.
You've been listening to Awakening, Talks with Compelling People. I'm Connie Shaw, and our guest was Jane Trainer of Fairbanks, Alaska. Thanks for being with us. Visit our website at connieshaw.com and listen next time. Remember, you can make a huge difference by sharing your love, talent, and experience to alleviate human suffering. Please commit to joining or creating a selfless service project in your community today.